Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by WTIC and Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank and their Cromwell Savings Bank Division. Hometown friends serving your best banking interests in every way. Now here's your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening. And with me is radio collector, historian Ed Corcoran, as usual. But our program is a bit different tonight. You know what? We've been receiving a lot of mail from people who say, I'd like to hear more of the shows and less talk on the program. Have you gotten those comments?
Yeah, especially when I do the talking. Yes, Nick.
Well, the mail gave me an idea, and I thought that perhaps we might just, let's say, deviate from our format, our regular format for tonight, and present a topic, a theme, so to speak. So I've allowed you to pick the theme.
Well, I chose quiz shows, Dick, because they're very much with us today on television. As you know, the afternoon is loaded with them. And most of these shows had their origins in radio, and maybe we can point it out tonight to our listeners.
And, of course, as you listen to some of these shows tonight, you'll find that the basic ingredients that are in today's television quiz shows were the same basic ingredients that were found in these shows.
Although I think today there's a little more greed involved. Then they used to compete for $15 or $20 or something like that, very, very modest sums, or just for the glory of it, really. But today you're talking about a lot of money on some of these shows where they give away thousands of dollars worth of things, and I think they purposely pick the contestants who are hyperactive, you know, who really get emotionally charged up. If they played it cool, they just wouldn't get on the show, I don't think.
Well, that's right. And speaking of money, of course, our very first excerpt will show how little money they actually gave away, but they were talking in terms of dollars, weren't they?
Yes, that's right. Well, this first one is really one of the most remembered of the shows. It was called Dr. IQ, and it consisted of a traveling troupe of radio performers who went from city to city, and they'd set up their facilities in a theater, and after the movie was shown, they would shut down, and then they would have the show live right from the theater with various quiz people up in the various parts, in the balconies and in the aisles and so forth. And it was very popular and is still remembered today.
Now, you say it was a team effort. There was no such person as Dr. IQ, one man portrayed him?
Or? Yeah, he was the one that asked the questions, but he had these other people assisting him, and they would pick people from all over the audience in various locations.
I have a lady in the balcony, Doctor.
Yeah, that's where that phrase came from, as a matter of fact. And they never did censor that line out, by the way.
Well, you want to go back?
Yes, let's go to Buffalo, New York, and hear Dr. IQ.
Presenting Dr. IQ. Mars Incorporated, makers of America's most enjoyable candy bars, bring you another half hour of fun with your genial master of wit and information, Dr. IQ, the mental banker. Here is that wise man with the friendly smile and the cash for your correct answers, Dr. IQ.
Thank you, Mr. Anthony, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My assistants are stationed throughout the audience with portable microphones, which will enable members of the theater audience to remain in their seats while answering the questions I ask from the stage. And may I present those assistants? Ed Reimer's on my right downstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
Ward Benton in the center aisle downstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
Pat Hill on my left downstairs.
Thank you, Doctor.
Ken Powell in the right balcony.
Thank you, Doctor.
Charlie Lewis in the center balcony.
Thank you, Doctor.
And Bill Mayhew in the left balcony.
Thank you, Doctor.
And so to our first contestant of the evening, Ed Reimer's on my right downstairs.
I have a gentleman, Doctor.
15 seconds. silver dollars to that gentleman with the correct answer to this one. Many American youths are answering their country's call by enlisting in the Army Air Corps. To enlist now, you may be between the ages of 18 and 26, single or married, and without formal education. Now, one of the most famous names connected with the Army Air Corps is its West Point of the Air. What is its name, and where is it located? No prompting, please.
Mitchell Field, New York.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. That's a good try, but I think you'd find the West Point of the Air is Randolph Field in Texas. Put a box of Dr. IQ candy to that gentleman. And two tickets to next week's production here at Cape Buffalo Theater in Buffalo, New York. Two-faced woman with Greta Garbo and now Ward Fenton in the center aisle downstairs.
I have a gentleman, Doctor.
12 silver dollars for the answer to this one. In the popular comic strip, The Timid Soul, by H.T. Webster, what is the name of its principal character? The Timid Soul. No prompting, please.
Sorry, I can't think of it.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. I think you'd find it Casper Milk Toast, wouldn't you? But a box of Dr. IQ candy to that gentleman. And two tickets to next week's production here at Cave Buffalo Theater in Buffalo. Pat Hill on my left downstairs.
I have a gentleman, Doctor.
19 silver dollars to that gentleman for this one. An engraver is commissioned to engrave a cube of metal. He is to engrave as many of the cube surfaces as possible, but no two engraved surfaces may touch. For his work, he is to be paid $10 for each surface he engraves. Under his instructions, how much will he be paid?
Would you repeat that, Doctor, please?
Yes, I'll be happy to repeat that, sir. An engraver is commissioned to engrave a cube of metal. He is to engrave as many of the cube surfaces as possible, but no two engraved surfaces may touch. And for his work, he is to be paid $10 for each surface he engraves. Now, under those instructions, how much will he be paid?
I'm sorry, Doctor. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't you want to try on it? Remember, no two surfaces may touch. $10 for each surface.
Oh.
5 seconds, please, sir. Want to try?
Three?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's two. $20. Only two surfaces can be engraved without touching another surface. But a box of Dr. IQ candy to that gentleman. Thanks for trying. And two tickets for next week's production of Chase Buffalo, Mount Ken Powell, and the Right Balcony.
I have a lady, Doctor.
16 silver dollars to that lady for this one. The Pan-American Conference of the Nations of the two American continents is now meeting to discuss united plans against the Axis. In what South American city is this important conference being held?
Rio de Janeiro.
Rio de Janeiro. 16 silver dollars to that lady.
I have a lady, Doctor.
For tonight's program, the clues for our biographical sketch of a famous personality were sent in by Mr. Michael Lang of 716 Wallace Street, Erie, Pennsylvania. The judges could choose only the single entry they felt was presented in the most interesting manner. But since a number of you suggested the same personality, the makers of Dr. IQ Candy are going to send a box of the new Dr. IQ Candy bars to each of the other contestants, sending in a sketch last week before midnight Thursday on the personality chosen for tonight. For using his information, the makers of Dr. IQ Candy Bars are going to send to Mr. Michael Lang a check for $250. Now, if you can correctly identify the personality I'm describing, after the first clue is given, I'll give you 75 silver dollars. Of course, the longer it takes you to identify him, the less your award. But if your award decreases, we will add all that you miss to the $250 Mr. Michael Lang will receive. Are you ready now for your first clue?
Yes.
$75. He was born in Easttown, Township, Pennsylvania, on New Year's Day, 1745, and is remembered as a reckless and brave soldier in our American Revolution.
I don't know, Doctor.
All right, $60. In school, his studies came second to his love of playing soldier with his classmates, thus upsetting the plans of his teachers. 5 seconds, please. All right, make a try.
I'm sorry.
$30. He fought with reckless bravery and complete disregard for danger in such battles as Brandywine, Germantown, Monmouth, and Yorktown. There's your fifth clue. 5 seconds, please.
Would you repeat that last over, please?
He fought with reckless bravery and complete disregard for danger in such battles as Brandywine, Germantown, Monmouth, and Yorktown. 5 seconds, please, ma'am. Time's almost up on that one.
$25.
All right, $25. Two of his most daring exploits were the dash through enemy lines with supplies for Washington's forces at Valley Forge and his storming and capture of Stony Point in a daring night attack. 5 seconds. No prompting, please. Number six. That's the sixth clue. Time's almost up on that clue. All right, number seven, $20. After the war, he served in the Pennsylvania legislature and in 1792 was appointed to command the American Army. 5 seconds, please, ma'am. I'm sorry, I'll have to call time. $15 for this one. In 1793, when trouble arose with the Indian tribes in the Northwest Territory, he defeated them at the famous Battle of the Fallen Timbers. He died at Erie, Pennsylvania, December 15th, 1796. No prompting, please. 5 seconds.
General Custer?
General Custer, no, but thanks for trying. Now, here's $10, your last clue. His first name was Anthony, and because of his reckless bravery, he was nicknamed Mad Anthony. No prompting, please. Mad Anthony. 5 seconds. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I'll have to call time. I think you'd find a General Anthony Wayne, Mad Anthony Wayne. But a box of Dr. IQ candy to that lady and 2 tickets for next week's production here at Jay's Buffalo Theater in Buffalo, New York.
It's incredible listening to that show today.
Did you get all the answers, Dick? I see. I was listening, watching you.
Number one, they gave away such, for today's standards, such small amounts of money. And the consolation prizes were candy bars. And number two, the questions were infinitely more difficult then than they are today.
I would say so. I had a tough time with that last one myself, I'll tell you.
Well, we didn't do too well here, but nevertheless, we got the IQ candy bars. We'll be back with more of the quiz shows on radio right after this.
Now that fall has arrived, the youngsters are back in school and family life is returning to more indoor activities. You may have decided that you need more room in your home, perhaps a family room. If that's the case, stop in and get complete information on a home improvement loan from the folks at Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank or Cromwell Savings Bank Division. Cromwell Savings Bank is located at the corner of Main and West Street and at the Cromwell Plaza office next to Kmart in Cromwell, with convenient Saturday hours 9 to noon. And Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has 4 offices to serve you, 2 in Middletown and branches in Montville and Colchester. With the exception of the Middletown office on Main Street, they are also open Saturdays from 9 to noon. Stop in soon. Let them show you how a home improvement loan may take the cramp out of your family's lifestyle. Member FDIC, an equal housing lender. Now back to Dick Bertel.
Well, Ed, we're delving into your collection of quiz programs on our Golden Age of Radio extravaganza tonight, and I still have to remark on the difficulty of the questions posed in that Dr. IQ broadcast. Also, I can imagine what that team of announcers felt like after that program was over, because they weren't coming up with any winners.
Yeah, they had one correct answer, and that's not very many, considering the size of the audience. And I guess Buffalo, maybe they didn't invite him back after that was over. I don't know.
I would think they'd have second thoughts. We're going to turn now to another quiz show, which was very, very popular. And you compare it to today's All in the Family. Why?
Well, because there are 4 panelists, basically. The producer, his name is Palazzi, actually produces the show itself. Fred Vandeventer, who is another panelist, and Florence Renaud are married, and the boy is their son. So you have the producer, a husband and wife, and their son all on the same show. So you can't very well go wrong that way as far as keeping it all in the family.
I suppose not. No, I see your point now. The language was not quite as sharp as it is today.
Yes, and I want to comment, too, that this is a professional panel. Now, we heard the amateurs, and I think you find the professionals, they do a much better job. You know, they have this showbiz atmosphere, and I think it's a more interesting format when you hear the people who are get paid to make the, to give the answers rather than who are, you know, just selected at random from an audience.
Are you saying that the program was scripted?
Oh, no, I'm just saying that they were professional panelists, just like we had on TV and or What's My Line or some of those where you had, they came back week after week.
I follow you.
And they you know, they, that was their expertise, has been able to go through these things. And you'll see that they can find some very quickly, and others it takes them a long time when they get some of these things they have to answer.
All right, now, the name of the show?
It's 20 Questions.
All right, let's listen.
Is it animal or mineral?
Is it a living American man?
Would I wear it at the beach?
Can Mr. Blasey spell it?
Does it stand on its hands?
Yes, everyone is playing 20 Questions.
And here's Bill Slick.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to 20 Questions. Now, here's how you play this game with us. You listeners send in subjects that our questioners try to discover in 20 questions or fewer. If your subject is used, you win a year's subscription to Paget Magazine free. And if your subject can't be named within 20 questions, you get the magazine free the rest of your life, plus a grand surprise prize. In case of duplication or similarity, the decision of our judges will be final and all entries become our property. Now, our mystery voice off stage in a soundproof booth will tell you at home what the subject is, while our studio audience here will know from a board that they alone can see. In other words, everybody will be in on the secret except our five eager questioners. Now, our questioners are Fred Vandeventer, well-known newscaster, Florence Renard, musician and teacher, Bobby McGuire, amazing 14-year-old schoolboy, Herb Palazzi, radio and motion picture producer, and our special guest tonight is one of America's most glamorous movie stars, Miss Lucille Ball. Miss Ball, we're very happy to have you here, and we're all enjoying this brand new picture of yours.
Thank you very much.
I refer to Easy to Wed.
Thank you, sir.
I would think you could very well be the subject of a picture by that name, Miss Ball. I may say so. Welcome to our little program. You ever played 20 Questions much before?
No, I haven't, Bill.
You played many other parlor games, Miss Ball, or shall we go into that?
No.
All right, let's get going with 20 Questions. Our first subject was submitted by James McKinney, whose home is in Wortham in the state of Texas. And this subject is animal.
This is the mystery voice speaking from offstage. The subject is that famous horse, Man of War.
All right, let's see if you can get this animal. Here goes Vandeventer.
Is it a living American man?
No, it's not a living American man. Mr. Palazzi?
Is it a four-legged animal?
Four-legged animal, yes. Has 4 feet, too. I'll help you out.
Thank you.
Bobby?
Is it a horse?
It's a horse, Bobby. Miss Renard?
Is it fictional?
No, indeed. Van?
Is this horse living now?
This horse is living now. That's 5 questions. Bobby?
Is it a racehorse?
It's a racehorse, Bobby. That's 6 questions.
Is he,
Ball?
Is it Busher?
No, it's not Busher. You backed the wrong horse there, Mrs. Ball. Bobby?
Is he racing today?
No, he's not racing today. That's 8 questions. Miss Renard?
Did he ever win the Derby?
Yes, he did, Miss Renard. That's 9 questions. Mr. Palazzi?
Could it be Man of War?
It could be Man of War, and it is Man of War. Bobby?
I'm not sure, but I don't believe Man of War even ran in the Derby for some reason.
I'm not sure whether he did or not, but
He won the Pimlico and the Belmont, but he never won the Derby, I don't believe.
Well, I'll take your word for that, Bobby. I'm not really much on horses, to tell you the truth. I wasn't attempting to horse you on that question. No, I thought he had won the Derby once. But you got Man of War in 10 questions, which is better luck than most people have with horses, isn't it, Mr. Palazzi?
Better luck than I had with Boswell today, I'll tell you that.
Yes, and the same goes for Mahout. Let's take subject number 2 here. Mrs. M. Castle of Brooklyn, New York, sent us this subject. This is vegetable and animal.
Bill is giving the panel 20 chances to discover shortening bread.
All right, let's see if you can get this. The folks at home know what it is. Now the studio audience knows, and here we go. Bobby?
Is it a class question?
A class question? No, not entirely. Vandeventer?
I assume that it's manufactured, and is the animal part of it leather?
The answer to your... The answer to your question, Mr. Vandeventer, and I am aware of your assumption, is no. Miss Renard.
Is it manufactured?
Yes, it's manufactured, Miss Renard.
Miss Ball?
Can I eat it?
You sure can eat it, Miss Ball. Bobby?
Is it a sweet food?
Not particularly, Bob. Not particularly. Here goes Miss Ball again.
Is it caviar?
No, it's not caviar, Miss Ball. We eat much more simple things on this program. Vandavenna?
Is it a typically American dish?
Yes, I think so. That's seven questions, and here's Van with
the beef
bite
stew.
Of it. What'd you say?
The beef stew.
Sorry. It's not beef stew. You'll have to be more studious, Mr. Vandavenna. Now let's try it, Miss Renard.
Is the animal in it meat?
Yes. Van again.
Has this dish been made famous in a comic strip?
Not in a comic strip. Bobby?
Is this dish more or less chopped up, you might say?
You mean when you attack it?
Yes.
No, it's pretty well held together when you go after it, Bobby. Although I don't know your table manners exactly. Miss Pelosi?
Would a ham actor enjoy eating any of it?
You mean has it got ham in it?
Yeah.
It hasn't got what we technically call ham in it, but you're closer than you think. Vandavenna?
Is the vegetable in it a single vegetable?
The vegetable in it is a processed vegetable.
Ms. Well, Paul, I know, but is it just one vegetable? I'm making
the
point.
No, there can be some different ones in it. But it's primarily one. Miss Paul.
Is it spam?
You've been overseas, haven't you, Miss Paul? It's not spam. Now, that's 15 questions, and this is a fairly famous American dish. Miss Renard?
Is the vegetable in it a macaroni product or something of that sort, such as spaghetti, macaroni, or anything? Of that sort.
Something of that sort, but not that. Bobby?
Will we ever classify this dish as being Chinese?
Oh, no, Bobby.
Not chop suey.
No. No, we said it's a typical American dish. Miss Ball?
It's not one meatball.
No. We have two questions left. It's might nigh as famous, though, Miss Ball. Van?
Would it be chicken and noodles?
No, it's not chicken and noodles. Now, you've only got one question left to get this particular item, and you'll be eating bitter crow if you don't. Mr. Pelosi?
I'll take a chance.
K-rationing.
I'm sorry, it's not K-rationing. It is shortening bread, my friends.
Oh.
And, oh, yes, of course. And so, did you have a question about shortening bread, Miss Renard?
I asked if the animal was meat, and you said yes.
That's right.
So there's no meat in shortening bread.
I'm afraid there is, Miss Renard. Where are you from?
I'm from Indiana, too.
Yes, Mr. Nod. Well, you can listen to a gentleman from West Virginia. Miss Ball?
Is that Nelson Eddy's shortening bread?
Nelson Eddy's shortening bread, Miss Ball. That's the one we're after. Well, you didn't get it in 20 questions.
We didn't even get the
bread. No, you were very crummy on that. Mrs. M. Castle of 253 East 52nd Street in Brooklyn, New York, is going to receive Pageant Magazine free for the rest of her life and also a fine post-war 5-tube radio. Congratulations to you, Mrs. Castle.
You know, it's amazing to hear these shows. Again, how simple they were in the prizes that they gave away, and yet how difficult the questions were. And it's interesting also to note that they were very naive about the future, in a sense. You know, they were giving Pageant Magazine away for the rest of a contestant's life. And one would think that, you know, you could say that about something as strong as Look Magazine or Life Magazine, little knowing that they wouldn't be printed any longer.
Saturday Evening Post, it was started back in the 1700s, and it didn't make it. So
that's right.
I don't think Pageant even made it, to tell you the truth.
Well,
I couldn't say for sure.
At any rate, things have changed. That was 20 questions, and we'll have some more questions for Ed Corcoran right after this.
Been eyeing the goodbyes on the remaining new 1976 automobiles? Or looking forward to purchasing one of the new 1977 models now coming out? Need some help in cleaning up some personal financial obligations? Whatever the worthwhile reason, stop in and see a loan officer at Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank or its Cromwell Savings Bank division. There are 6 conveniently located offices to serve you. Cromwell Savings Bank is located at the corner of Main and West Street and at the Cromwell Plaza office next to Kmart. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has 4 offices to serve you, two in Middletown, and branches in Montville and Colchester. Stop in soon. All offices are open Saturday from 9 to noon, except the Farmers and Mechanics Main Street office in Middletown. Convenient one-stop banking. Convenient hours. Plenty of free, convenient parking. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank and Cromwell Savings Bank Division are members of FDIC. They look forward to helping you. Now, once again, back to Dick Bertel.
Well, Ed and I are going through Ed's collection of quiz programs. We're devoting our entire program tonight to that category. And I understand, Ed, that you have a surprise for me.
Yes, this one I'd like to just play it and have you listen and then see whether you can guess what the quiz program is that we're listening to, okay?
Okay, let's listen.
For you to want me, if it's just for a day. La-di-da-dum, for you to thrill me, why do you do the things you do?
Stop! The music!
Oh, operator! Where to, please? We're calling Mount Vernon, New York. All right, and who are we going to talk to at Mount Vernon, please? Mr. Samuel Bunnell, all right. Hello, Sam! Well, how are you tonight? What's the name of the song Dick was just singing, do you know? It isn't fair, that's it.
Well, you got that one, didn't you, Dick?
Well, I did, yeah. As soon as I heard Bert Parks, I knew it would stop the music. No question about that. That was a big show in the late 40s.
Well, it actually was the last major quiz show on radio because, you know, it was in the twilight of radio, and it was opposite Fred Allen. It's an old story. I guess you know about that, that Fred Allen offered a reward of $5,000 to anybody who would miss the prize here by listening to him. You know, but it literally swept him off the airways because this show was so popular that even Fred Allen wasn't able to stand it, you know, stand the competition. So it did sound the death knell of Fred Allen, and with his show, most of the other radio shows went along with it. And then
That's
this
right.
later went to television.
Yeah. You know, the literally all of America was listening to this program at the time because the rewards were so great as contrasted to those earlier shows.
Yeah,
you were
this was
for
the first of the real big time money shows that was on, and again it carried into TV with the $64,000 question and so
right.
forth. But this is going to set the stage for big money. You get a big audience, I guess. That's the answer to that.
What the American people didn't realize was that all of the people who participated on the program were called in advance to make sure they were home. They were screened as such, and the public was duped, really.
I wasn't aware of that. That's news to me.
Well, what else would you like to know? I'll tell you about that program. And then, of course, they would always have a mystery tune that no one could get. That would go on week after week, and then they would begin to plant the title of that song in various columns.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they have a mystery celebrity, too? I remember Harry James was one of them. Maybe it was a different show. But I know maybe it was a mystery.
I think you're thinking of Truth or Consequences, and there was a time in the 40s when they did have a mystery guest, and I remember Martha Graham was mystery guests.
Right. And it took many, many weeks before they come up with an answer, and everybody said, it was Margaret Graham, but she's still alive today, and she's still active.
That's right. Well, you know, the program we're about to hear is one upon which there have been many, many variations, and Bob and Ray, of course, are one of the teams that have come up with variations on this particular series. They have their own called the Question Man, but I'm thinking of the Answer Man.
Yes, this wasn't exactly a quiz program, but at least when you asked a question, you always got a correct answer, and it was very interesting. This particular show talks about Thanksgiving. We're not too far from there right now, and a lot of interesting things come out of this, just listening to it, about the origin. For example, it wasn't in November, the first one. It was in December and things like that. So I thought this would be an interesting one to have our audience hear because it's quite informative, and it does follow the pattern of quiz shows.
Okay, The Answer Man.
Albert Mitchell's program, The Answer Man. The program that answers your questions just as Tromer's White Label answers America's demand for a lighter, finer, premium beer. The Answer Man is presented as a service to you, to give you the answers to your questions. And here he is, the Answer Man.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're all having a nice Thanksgiving day.
And I believe you some questions about Thanksgiving there for me to answer.
Quite a few. Let's begin with this one from a Summit, New Jersey listener. Who ate the most at the first Thanksgiving dinner?
The Indians. The Indians not only had larger appetites, but they outnumbered white men at the first Thanksgiving feast, 90-55.
Next, a Smithtown, Long Island man asks, are all the people of this country celebrating Thanksgiving on the same day this year?
No, not all. The people of Florida, Idaho, Nebraska, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia have to wait till next Thursday to celebrate Thanksgiving.
Why is that? Didn't President Roosevelt proclaim the 23rd as Thanksgiving Day?
Yes, and Congress passed a resolution that Thanksgiving Day should always fall on the fourth Thursday of the month. But the President and Congress don't make legal holidays. That's a state's right. And these six states, the legislature or governor, decided on the last Thursday, which this year is the fifth Thursday of the month.
This letter from a Brooklyn woman reads, which was the bigger holiday in pilgrim times, Christmas or Thanksgiving? My husband says Thanksgiving, but that doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Maybe it doesn't, but your husband is right. Thanksgiving was a far more important festivity, for to many Puritans, the celebration of Christmas was idolatry, hateful idolatry.
A young man of Greenwich, Connecticut, wonders why we call a turkey, since the bird didn't come from the country Turkey.
No, but when the bird was first introduced into Europe, the name Turkey was used to mean any far distant land. So it was natural for them to call it a turkey cock.
A man who lives in Garfield, New Jersey, inquires, when was Thanksgiving Day first celebrated by the whole United States?
On November 26, 1789, when, at the request of Congress, George Washington proclaimed the Day of Thanksgiving for the whole nation.
A Manhattan woman wants to know if the Indians knew how to make pumpkin pie.
No, they didn't know how to make pie crust. But the Indians did have a pumpkin pudding made with maple syrup.
A Camp Upton, Long Island soldier asks, is there such a thing as a turkey with all white meat?
Yes. White turkeys produce all white, or at least light, meat. And now let's have some more questions of a general nature.
All right. Here's one from a Brentwood, Long Island listener. Can you marry your cousin in New York State?
Yes.
And a young man writes from Stamford, Connecticut. Isn't reading funny books a good way to take your mind off your lessons?
Yes, reading funny books is an excellent way to take your mind off your lessons.
A Ramsey, New Jersey listener writes, some years ago, H.G. Wells chose what he thought were the six greatest men of all time. Do you remember who they were?
H.G. Wells chose as the six greatest men of all time Jesus of Nazareth, Buddha, Asoka, Aristotle, Roger Bacon, and Abraham Lincoln.
A Far Rockaway, Long Island man writes, the Chicago transportation lines have gone into bankruptcy. So I'd like to know, what are the fares they charge in Chicago now?
8 cents on streetcars, 10 cents on subways and elevated lines, and 10 cents on buses.
A Camp Upton, Long Island soldier inquires, what did a United States infantry company consist of during the Revolutionary War?
During the Revolutionary War, a company in the United States infantry consisted of one captain, one lieutenant, one ensign, 4 sergeants, 6 corporals, 2 musicians, and 90 privates.
This note from a Bronxville listener reads, if the automobile was invented in England over 100 years ago, why wasn't it in use there in Victoria's time?
The automobile was invented by an Englishman by the name of Trevithick in 1801, but further development of the machine was arrested by the Red Flag Act, in which Parliament decreed that a man had to walk ahead of any automobile with a red flag by day and a red light by night. And this in spite of the fact that the speed of Trevithick's car was only 4 miles per hour. The law was not repealed until 1896.
A listener of Poughkeepsie, New York asks, who were the first people to say they were paying through the nose?
The Irish. In the 9th century, the Danes, who conquered Ireland, imposed a poll tax that was historically called the nose tax.
A high school girl writes from Newark, in my English course, I read a book called The Lost Mine of Tisingal. Is there really such a mine?
Yes. The lost mine of Tisingal, from which the Spaniards took an untold amount of gold, is located somewhere in the province of Chiriqui in the Republic of Panama. But no one knows exactly where. All traces of the mine were lost after the massacre of the Spanish in 1611.
This letter comes from a Long Island City listener and reads, suppose a man is standing holding a bag of grain on each shoulder. Now, after the lifting has been done, is he working? Is he exerting himself?
Yes, indeed. A man is exerting energy every moment he's holding the bags up. In fact, it's work for a man just to stand without holding anything.
A man who lives in Brooklyn asks, When did Charlie Miller win the six-day bicycle race he won?
Charles Miller won his first six-day bicycle race at the old Madison Square Garden in 1897, won again in 1898, and rode with Frank Waller to win his first team race in 1899.
A young man of Tarrington, Connecticut, wonders if squirrels are the only animals that come down a tree head first.
No. Squirrels, chipmunks, and similar rodents are the only animals that naturally come down trees head first. But apes, monkeys, raccoons, porcupines, opossums, kinkajous, and other heavier-bodied tree climbers may come down a tree head first if they're in a hurry. And coatimundis are not in the least particular which way they come down. With coatimundis, it's pretty much which end up they are when they start.
Next, a Bronx listener asks, where does Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone, lie buried?
Beneath a huge rock atop a peninsula mountain in Brador Lake near Bedeque, Cape Breton, Nova Scotia.
A Valley Stream Long Island woman inquires, what is triskaidekaphobia?
Triskaidekaphobia is morbid fear of the number 13.
And a Forest Hills Long Island golfer asks, did two golf balls ever hit in midair?
Yes, a number of times. Head on, from an angle, and even one ball overtaking the other. In 1928 at Wentworth Falls, Australia, playing chip shots from opposite sides of the fairway, two players swung at about the same time. Another player who was standing at the pin saw the two golf balls hit in the air and then both drop into the hole.
A Brooklyn woman inquires, what is the height of a city milk bottle? Quart size.
The common variety is 9.5 inches tall.
Here's a question from a listener in Smithtown, Long Island. How much water does the geyser Old Faithful in Yellowstone Park spout when it goes off every hour?
Old Faithful geyser spouts between 10 and 12,000 gallons of hot water every 65 minutes.
A letter from a man who lives in Palisades, New Jersey reads, I've heard it said that the Palisades, that is, the channel cut by the Hudson River, extends out into the Atlantic Ocean quite a ways beyond what we think of as the mouth of the river. Can this be true?
Yes, it's true. The channel of the Hudson River extends out into the Atlantic to a spot about 100 miles south and east of Ambrose Lightship off Sandy Hook.
How deep is the gorge?
At its mouth, the channel is 1,600 feet below sea level. And since the ocean air is only 260 feet deep, the underwater palisades must be 1,340 feet high.
A Trenton man inquires, at what time between the end of the last war and the beginning of this one was there the least unemployment in this country?
During the peak of prosperity in 1929, there was less than 500,000 unemployed, an estimated 429,000.
A Trenton, New Jersey listener writes, how about a Thanksgiving toast? Got one?
Yes, indeed. A toast to wartime Thanksgiving. Here's to the things for which we're thankful. Here's to the blessings we enjoy today. Here's to the day of real Thanksgiving, the day our boys come home to stay.
Well, that's the answer, man. And obviously you get the feeling of the war with that last quotation, the heaviness and the heartbreak of World War II.
Yeah, that's why these were preserved, because more recordings were saved during World War II than were saved at any other period. Even, you know, following the war, most of these shows were lost, but we do have some of these as a result, because they went out to the armed forces all over the world, and they were saved.
I thought the answer man was an absolute genius when I was
a isn't he something? You know, any one individual, if he could do that off the cuff, wouldn't he be something?
Well, I believe he did, didn't you?
Well, I thought he did have a little research assistant in there someplace to help him out.
Now you realize that they probably had a staff of 5 people looking up all the answers, and probably not all the questions were authentic either. They probably worked questions in to fit the day. For example, the great many Thanksgiving questions they received.
Yeah, there was certainly a deluge of them, and they were all interesting and informative. So I guess you're right. I think that's their province to put in a few extras to beef up the show as is required.
Well, we'll be back with another quiz program, and this is a most unusual one on a classic performance right after this.
Saving is a habit, a good habit to develop, because what you save today will always come in handy tomorrow. When you open a savings account at Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank or its Cromwell Savings Bank division, you not only get a variety of savings plans to choose from, you also get the greatest interest available by law. What's more, the passbook they give you may be used at any of their 6 conveniently located offices. Start building for a secure tomorrow with a savings account at Cromwell Savings at the corner of Main and West Street or the Cromwell Plaza office next to Kmart in Cromwell. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has four offices to serve you, two in Middletown and branches in Montville and Colchester. Stop in soon. All offices are open Saturdays from 9 to noon, except the Farmers and Mechanics Main Street office in Middletown. In addition to the convenience of one-stop banking and convenient hours, you'll also find plenty of free parking. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank and Cromwell Savings Bank Division are members of FDIC. Stop in soon and start the good savings habit.
Quiz programs. That's our topic tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio, and we're about to present the dean of quiz programs. This had to be the best one on the air, I guess, the most highly prized, the most deeply researched.
Yes, and it was on for many, many years, and it became a household word. It was called Information Please, and that's what it was all about. The audience was invited to send in questions on a subject and try to quiz one of four or all four of a panel. And if they succeeded, they got an entire set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is a pretty substantial prize, but very few of them ever did.
Yeah, that's right. Who were some of the panel members?
Well, the one that's still alive is John Kieran, who lives up in Massachusetts, not too far from here. And then Oscar Levant, who was famous in the motion pictures and is a pianist, was a regular member. Franklin P. Adams, who was a member of the Algonquin Round Table, who was a very literary group of that era. And then the Master of Ceremonies itself was Clifton Fadiman, who was a very well-known, in intellectual circles, a book reviewer and so forth. But tonight's guest was really exceptional, Dick, and it was Wendell Willkie.
Now, this program not only was exceptional because of the guest, Wendell Willkie, but because of where it originated.
Yes, it was done right here in little old Hartford, Connecticut, on WTIC, back during the World War II, during one of the war loan drives. The idea was, by going from city to city, they would charge substantial pledges to go in and see the show in war bonds. Maybe you'd pledge $1,000 worth of bonds, and that got you in. And they raised, I think, something like $250 million, because some of the insurance companies pledged very substantial sums. So they raised a fabulous amount of money for that particular time.
Where specifically did this program originate, the one we're going to hear now?
At the Bushnell Memorial.
All right. Information, please.
Wake up, America. Time to stump the expert. Information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your question. Information, please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Information Please's third stop in its bond-selling drive, not counting the little job we did a couple of weeks ago for the Red Cross. Tonight, we are broadcasting from Bushnell Memorial Hall in the colorful old city of Hartford, Connecticut. Tonight, 3,400 citizens of Hartford, including standees, are packing the hall. Tonight, our three regulars, Franklin P. Adams, Oscar Levant, and the New York Sun columnist, John Kieran, take special pride in welcoming as their colleague one of the most distinguished and far-sighted of living Americans, Mr. Wendell Willkie. All right, gentlemen, we're all set. And here we go with a question from Gene Renwick of Bismarck, North Dakota. I think this is a very interesting question. Can you quote, not exactly, but just the substance, the first part of the Bill of Rights, the first commitment of the Atlantic Charter, and the first of Wilson's 14 points? Now, you don't have to take all of them, but Mr. Willkie, would you give us start us off on it?
Well, the Bill of first provision of the Bill of Rights has to do with the freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, right of assembly.
That's exactly right.
And let's see, now what was your next one?
The Atlantic Charter, the first commitment of the Atlantic Charter.
The first commitment of the Atlantic Charter is of Great Britain and the United States agreeing that they will not seek any territorial or other aggrandizement, isn't it?
That's exactly right, Mr. Willkie. You're going swell. How about the 14 points?
late lamented.
That's Wilson's 14 point?
Yes, unless you have some others up your sleeve.
Wasn't that where he talked about the open covenants openly arrived at?
That's exactly right, Mr. Wilkie. That's 3 out of 3. And all of those worth remembering, Mr. Wilkie, you think? Every one of them?
Particularly today.
That's quite right. How about this one from Lina Grierson of Bridgeport, Connecticut, not far from where we are at the moment. What famous person do you associate with this maxim? Sir, I would rather be right than be president. Mr. Wilkie.
Henry Clay.
Yes. Would the rest of you gentlemen care to commit to this a little once in a while? Mr. Curran.
I was only one that said...
He wasn't either of them.
Well, he took it out of my mouth.
Well, I don't think everyone got that, Mr. Curran. What were you going to say?
Same thing that Frank said.
What'd you say, Mr.
He wasn't either.
He was neither.
Yeah, Henry Clay, yeah. Well, he was often right, but he never did get to be president. Mr. Wilkie, when did he make that remark? Do you know what point in his career, apropos of what? What speech? Well, it was in 1850, referring to the compromise.
Yes, compromise.
Quite right. How about this one? The bigger they come, the harder they fall. Who said it? The bigger they come, the harder they fall. Mr. Adams.
A prize fighter.
Name him.
Precise
information we need, Mr. Adams.
I don't know. It might have been Corbett, Jeffries.
No, it was neither Corbett nor Jeffries. Mr. Kidd?
Yes, Willis.
I would say it was Jack Dempsey, among others.
Well, before that, Mr. Kieran.
Gus, the Cornishman, the freckled Cornishman, Bob Fitzsimmons.
That's the one. Yes, Bob Fitzsimmons, just before his fight.
Just before he fought Ed Dunkhorst, the human freight car, who fell.
When was this, Mr. Kieran?
Around 1900, or perhaps a little earlier.
A little earlier than that, that's right. Now, who said, I'll tell the world? I'll tell the world. It's a famous phrase. Who said it first? I'll tell the world.
Oh, I think that's in Shakespeare.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Quite right.
I'm
Mr. Wilson, congratulating
Mr. Kieran.
I can't pick
the play. I remember.
Waller Winchell in Shakespeare.
Yes, can you guess the play, Mr. Curran? You're generally very good at this. Just drag that play out from your subconscious.
No, it'd be a waste of time.
I don't know.
Measure for Measure. It's Isabella
that's
to Angelo.
That's right.
Remember it now? Yes. I'll tell the world what manner of man thou art.
That's right.
Shakespeare said it first. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Miriam R. Goldberg of New York City? What American public figure of the past or the present would be a suitable guest on Information, Please, because of these varied talents and interests and activities? I'm going to name them. Now, this first chap was, or is, the following: a linguist, a botanist, a violinist, a dancer, interior decorator, architect, philosopher, ambassador, administrator. Mr. Wilkie.
Thomas Jefferson.
That's right, Mr. Wilkie. Quite right. What were you going to say, Mr. Levan?
I was going to say Thomas Jefferson.
Very good. Oscar, if Mr. Wilkie ever becomes president, you can be vice president.
Sounds like a good ticket.
Mr. Wilkie, I want you to give our other young men a chance once in a while. We'd like to hear from them.
Not if I'm vice president, I'll be glad to shut up.
You'll have to.
Well, that's something to look forward to. How about this one? Now, this chap, an American of the past or present, was a country school teacher, a compositor, a wanderer, an editor, a war correspondent, a government clerk, a nurse, a poet, and an essayist. Who was he? Mr. Adams.
Walt Whitman.
That's quite right, yes. I had several hands on that. Mr. Wilkie and Mr. Levant. You want to say Walt Whitman, Mr. Levant?
I was, because he was a nurse. That's what tipped me off.
That's right. That's what tipped it off to you.
Oh, I'm in the cabinet.
And now, gentlemen, here is the third of our famous figures. This fellow was a teacher, a lawyer, a farmer, a traveler, an author, a business executive,
and a soldier. Have three hands, Mr. Curran.
That would be Wendell Wilkie.
Wendell, is that right, Mr. Wilkie?
Well, Martin.
That's quite right. Yes, Mr. Wilkie entered World War I as a private, and how'd you come out, Mr. Wilkie?
Captain?
Lieutenant.
Captain.
Wasn't Captain?
Well,
Captain.
I was the first lieutenant throughout the war. I was recommended for promotion at the end when they knew I was through.
You mean you kind of held your own, eh?
And now we'll go on with a question from M.C. Burns of Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania. And this is a question about some famous Connecticut worthies. All these chaps came from Connecticut. And each of these men revolutionized something. The work of what Connecticut man revolutionized small arms? Small arms. Mr. Wilkie.
Remington, brother.
Well, Remington certainly was very important. Mr.
Colt.
Mr. Samuel Colt, yes. Invented the what? Do you know, Mr. Adams?
The Colt revolver.
Yes, but a particular mechanism which revolutionized small arms. Mr. Curran, you might possibly know.
You repeated, didn't it?
Yes, the revolving breech pistol.
Well,
that's right.
What a revolver means.
It made it easy for domestic murders, the Colt.
Yes, I beg your pardon. You want to brood about that, Mr. Levant?
I'll brood about you.
Now, what Connecticut man revolutionized the study of the English language in America? Mr. Adams.
Noah Webster.
Noah Webster. Mr. Wilkie was about to say the same thing.
Noah Webster of Hartford.
Was he of Hartford? I don't think he was of
Hartford.
Hartford
and New Haven.
What'd you say?
I think he was from Litchfield myself.
Litchfield. Well, we'll hear from Hartford and Litchfield in the morning. Now, what Connecticut man revolutionized the economy of the South? The economy of the South. Mr. Curran.
Eli Whitten.
Yes, Mr. Wilkie.
Invented the cotton gin.
Invented the cotton gin. That's quite right. That gives us three Connecticut men.
Well, it really brings it right back to home, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was a great way to end up the quiz shows because right here in our own backyard and the most famous show on the air, no question about it.
You know, I liked tonight's format. I really did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Dick, because I was able to come up with the excerpts that fit together. A lot of times with a guest, you can't always put the right kind of a show together as far as the shows. So tonight we had an exceptional one, I thought.
Well, I certainly feel enlightened after having heard some of those questions. You know,
yes.
If they were to ask questions like that on television today, I don't think any of us would get them, but they did pretty well back then, I must say. Well, we'll have to try this again sometime with a different theme and without a guest, and we'll delve into that collection of yours once again. Ed, until next time, this is Dick Rattell.
And this is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
Al Kemp, on the air for Griffin.
The Golden Age of Radio has been brought to you by WTIC and Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank Division. Hometown friends, serving your best banking interests in every way. The Golden Age of Radio was produced by Bob Schirago and Dick Rattell.
Willard Waterman as the Great Gildersleeve.
Texaco service stations and dealers in all our 48 states present for your entertainment Eddie Duchin and his music.